Okay, so back. Good morning, everybody. What members have are three sets of documents. The first document is the revised strategic plan. It's this one. The second document is a PowerPoint presentation. And then the third document is what the committee section has just handed out, which is a combination of all the PowerPoint presentations from the summit across the 2 days. So it's one folder. What we suggested was, it is up to members, we could either start with the revised strategic plan, or we can start with what this, the presentation and what the summary, the issues which emerged at the summit. So maybe we could take guidance from the committee. Do you want to start with the strategic plan first, or
the first plan came as a result of what we went through at a workshop, and I think this overview is about that. So if we also want the overview to be done, I think it will be more, you know, logic to start with the overview, even before we go to the then first plan.
Thank you, Chair. So if members can just go to the PowerPoint presentation. What we've done is we've just compiled for across the 2-3 days everything that came out from the various presentations in terms of the challenges and the concerns that were raised by the various provinces, and then also what's the way forward for the committee following the summit. So the first page is just an indication of which provinces participated. And as we know, the Northwest and the Free State were the only provinces who didn't have any delegations that were sent to attend. Looking at what, let's just recap what the focus was of the summit. So it was provincial legislatures and the premier's offices coming to talk to us about their programs relating to women, children, and persons with disabilities. And across the 2 days, delegates engaged with an understanding and sharing knowledge about provincial structures that deal with the target groups, and looking at ways for provinces to work collaboratively. And we also had a presentation by the department to see where we can have that synergy from between national and provincial legislatures. If we turn over to the next page, the following two slides is a summary basically of all the challenges and concerns. Members will remember from Zane's presentation that we all the provinces sat together and they compiled all those concerns. We've done a similar exercise, and you know there is similarities between what they presented there. So this is just a shortened version of what they had there. So the first thing was in terms of structural inconsistencies across provinces. As members, that not everybody had the same setup in the provinces. Some had something in the premier's office, others had special programs, some had a chief director, some had, you know, there just was inconsistencies in relation to that. The second thing was there was limited human and financial resources. And provinces indicated that this impacted on the way that they were able to perform their tasks and also the amount of people they were able to appoint. Also the lack of specialized skills and research experiences in these within the legislatures and within the provinces. And I think the key thing also there was that staff that were employed often don't have decision-making authority. And that also impacts on how services are delivered to these target groups and decisions are taken with regard to them. Often these issues were seen as a side issue and grouped under one unit. as opposed to having a dedicated person or dedicated unit for each of the target groups. And in some instances, children's issues didn't even form part of the special programs within a previous office. It was, I think in one case it was with social development or instances like that. And then also in terms of mainstreaming, not all provinces had a uniform understanding of what mainstreaming was and how it needed to be done. So that didn't translate into the programs that they had. And number five, which is a problem that I think we've also raised numerous times, is that there's a lack of disaggregated data in relation to women, children, and persons with disabilities. So within provinces, the same problem exists, and how are people supposed to plan, how do they cater for these different target groups when there is no disaggregated data available. And then also, that in many cases, provincial legislatures didn't have the ability to hold HODs to account in terms of services they were supposed to deliver to the various target groups, and how that impacted on women, children, and persons with disabilities. In terms of the legislatures, some legislatures didn't have committees that dealt with women, children, and persons with disabilities, and in other instances, they were only focused on one of these groups and leaving the others out. Also, the lack of focal points, and then some instances also it was mostly gender-based and not focusing on children, persons with disabilities. Over the next page would then be the key considerations that came out across the two days also. So firstly, one of the main things that was highlighted was that there should be a chief directed to mainstream issues effectively within provinces. Because we also know that these issues are transversal, so why have, also in terms of employment and the setup of that unit, why have it as an aside thing when we should have dedicated chief directors in provinces to deal with women, children, persons with disabilities. In terms of performance contracts of HODs, it was recommended that perhaps these performance contracts contain provisions that speak to the service delivery to women, children, persons with disabilities, and that this would ensure that the HOD is then accountable to these sectors in the services that are provided to them. In terms of the committees that we spoke about earlier, that the structure wasn't replicated at all provinces, in all the legislatures, that there's a need to establish a specific committee that deals with these sectors, and this will then assist with the monitoring and evaluation of government service delivery at provincial level. One of the big things was the need to ensure compliance with international instruments and government obligations at provincial level, because we're really focused at the national level, ensuring that we are complying with all these instruments, but what's happening at provincial and at local government level. So doing that and ensuring that compliance will ensure that these policies at national level are also translated and implemented at the provincial level. Then the key thing around grouping these target groups as collective, and the implications for doing that and referring to them as a vulnerable group. I think there was a big discussion around what do we mean by vulnerable groups and who is vulnerable and those things. And then also the structural alignment with the national department and provincial and local government. That was also quite a big discussion that was had over the 2 days. And that at provinces, it's necessary that all legislation, budgets, policies, and the like should be considered, and the implications of those on women, children, and persons with disabilities. And then also in terms of public participation at provincial level, that it's important to have the input from all the sectors in terms of women, children, and persons with disabilities. So when you're having something impacting on these target groups, ensure that they are part of that process. Then the last slide is looking at what is it that the committee has gained from the 2 days, and what is it that we need to do from here. So the first thing in terms of, and I mean this is not exclusive, I'm sure members can add to this, But the summit allowed an opportunity for the committee to get an idea of what is going on in provinces. We've heard a lot because we've only had interaction with the department most of the time. So this is an opportunity for us to get to know what are the challenges and concerns and achievements within the provinces. Also, there was an opportunity to learn about best practices within provinces. In numerous provinces, they had signed agreements with premier's offices or with HODs or in terms of accountability and also many other things. And then it also creates an opportunity to build relationships between provinces and with our committee. So from here, what is it that we can do? I think there's a need for continued interaction with the premier's offices and provincial legislatures, specifically with regard to these special programs. And there's a need for regular engagement and feedback with the department in terms of the structure and the MOUs that they are planning to sign with the different premier's offices. We could also undertake oversight visits to see these special programs in the different provinces. And then possibly an annual follow-up. It doesn't necessarily need to be in the same format that we had, but just keeping that contact on an annual basis, have something where we have similar inputs from the provinces and the legislatures. So we've taken this and incorporated, particularly in relation to the last slide, into our strategic plan also to see where we can fit in what we've accomplished over the 2 days and take that forward.
Thank you very much, members. I'm not sure whether we want to entertain this or whether we should proceed to the first plan and then take whatever things from there.
That which you think that was not, addressed in perhaps the way forward, and then if it's not addressed in the first place. Member Petty?
Thank you. I just have a question when it comes to the use of the and thinking of the presentation that was done by the DG on the department and how they see the problem getting to a point where the sector actually goes under the premium of the provinces, which means the size of authority. Whether we should not put that as a issue, because I think what the department is trying to do is to get a unified structure that we get government structurally in place.
Member Duncan, I think that has been noted. Member Kekana?
Yes, thanks, when you started, I thought you weren't well. I thought you were ill or something, but now I can see you're peeping up. No, I wanted to ask our researcher some similar questions. The province, you know, in the past we were told the budget is what it is. I know you spoke about limited resources, both human and financial. But there was this argument that in any case, our portfolio or our department is such that it can't receive a big budget because all these data, the women, children, disability, are cut cross into other departments. And I just want to know, maybe in strategic planning, whether we have, again, a structure, not just at the province, at national, because all ministries, health, education, and so on, issues of disability, health, women, children, youth are there. What kind of a system have we put in place to make sure that this matters that cut across are addressed at national level, at all spheres, at all tiers of government, at province and at local government. You see, until there's a structure and a system that will affect them, they won't happen automatically. And in your presentation, you're just speaking about province. But at all tiers of government, that should be the case, something that we can look forward to. Thank you.
Thanks, Member Kekana. I think that will also form part of the workshop that we are going to have with the department, because if you can remember at the workshop, during the presentation, the DG indicated that they met with the president. You know, they met with the president in terms of this, and there was going to be a follow-up the following week. So we do expect them to give us a report back at our next meeting with them. Can we switch off the meeting? Any other, or can we proceed then to the spread plan? Over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson. What we thought in terms of the strategic plan is that we'll go through page by page. So starting on page 2, we'll look at what the committee had discussed, and maybe if there are any recommendations or edits, members can give input so that we can amend accordingly, and that we know there's agreement as we go through each section. So the strategic plan has been subdivided into the roles and functions of Parliament. So we're starting off with issues around legislation. In terms of activities and laws, currently in the second column under activities, we've subdivided all bills and or acts that are relevant to this committee. In terms of bills to be initiated, that's the recognition of Muslim marriages bill. That particular bill would go probably through the Justice Committee. And again, the committee's role would be conferral with Justice, even requesting for a joint meeting, so that in terms of the gendered implications, particularly for Muslim women and children, in many instances, the committee would have a role to play. At the moment, there hasn't been a date set yet for when Justice will engage with that particular bill. But the suggestion would be that the committee drafts a letter to the Chairperson of Justice requesting what the status is of the bill, or when do they intend having the bill on the program, and are we able to confer, have a joint meeting. But over and above that, it's also the committee's prerogative if the committee wants to be briefed on what the bill stands for. We can take guidance from the committee, and that can be arranged. Secondly, in terms of bills to be deliberated on, we had given input on two: protection from harassment bill and trafficking. The trafficking bill, we sat in on engagements around public hearings, and there was also input from Department of Justice, the Portfolio Committee of Justice. The deliberation clause by clause hasn't happened, and there's no indication on Justice's program as to when trafficking will come back on. So that's another issue for the committee to highlight to the Chair of Justice. What is the status? Because bearing in mind that the committee has no voting power around clause by clause deliberation, but we can give input in terms of what we had recommended around implications for children and women. And the same applies to the protection from harassment bill. Many of the outcomes from our public hearings on the Domestic Violence Act related to the matters pertaining to this bill, which we gave a submission to. But again, there's no indication from the Justice Committee as to when they're going to be dealing with that. So we've got a request. In terms of bills for amendment, there's the Domestic Violence Act. In terms of our public hearings, we still need to have a debate in the House of the report, but in that report on our public hearings, there were particular recommendations that had come out that suggested that components of the Domestic Violence Act need to be amended. And one that comes to mind is the issue of imminent harm. What do we mean by imminent harm? What are the implications of that? The traditional courts bill, I'll just ask for just to give a little bit of input on that.
We had in last year, or now 2009 actually, we sent a letter to Justice raising the concerns in terms of the traditional courts bill. This is also a matter that had been deferred or conferred with the JMC at the time, for in 2008. So we have sent the concerns through and the input from the portfolio committee as well. In last year, I think that bill was sent back because it was felt that there wasn't enough public participation around certain aspects of it. I think it has now come back to Justice, but as yet there's no indication of when it will be deliberated. So we will follow up with that and then also ask for conferral again in that regard with the Justice Committee. Under the ones to be considered, those two were when we had our strategic planning the very first time in 2009 when we set up our program, our five-year program. Those were recommended by some of the people that we had to come and do presentations who indicated that those two acts also have specific gendered implications and that the committee should give input on those. As yet, we haven't done anything in relation to that yet. But it's just to make members aware that should it come that week, we'll also be having input on those two goals when they do, when the request is made for any amendments or changes to them.
The last two bills are ethic suggestions by the department, the gender equity bill and the disability bill. We actually didn't receive notification. We found out the department will be having a meeting discussion, the likes thereof, tomorrow around the gender equity bill. And again, the committee wasn't informed by it because if that had to happen, it would have come through Nsiki or Meliswa. So there's an initial discussion to look at what the implications of this bill are. What the department did indicate to us is that in terms of legislation, they said this is something they're wanting to do and they need to the conference which didn't happen last year, and it's something they were going to pick up on. In terms of the disability bill, there isn't a draft, but again it's a suggestion by the department that it's something that they're thinking of and there's something that they're wanting to do. So I think we've had this to be discussed. I think it would be important to take guidance from the committee as to request the department, please give us input as to what the status is with regards to the gender equity bill and the disability bill. So in a nutshell, that gives our activities. In terms of the targets and outputs, depending on our level of engagement and involvement with the bill, we'd request briefings by departments, we'd be involved in committee deliberations. If needs be, if the gender equity bill, for example, is sent to our committee, at that stage we'd look at issues around public hearings, advertisements, and engaging with civil society. In terms of where we think the committee has a role to play now in relation to justice, as I indicated at the onset, I think it would be important for the committee to write formally to the Justice Committee and request, we can bullet them with regards to each of these bills, what's the current status, when do they intend having it on their program, is there an opportunity for us to confer, can we arrange joint meetings. And then in terms of the gender equity bill and disability bill, again, it's really a liaison of the department to keep the committee up to date. So maybe I'll pause there and hand over to members if there are any changes, suggestions, recommendations in terms of what needs to be altered.
Thank you, Kashifa.
Thank you very much. Let me then open to members to speak to what has been highlighted by the researchers. I will start with Member Ketana and then Member Robinson. Over to you. And don't make preambles. Just move straight to the point.
Can I make the last preamble? Okay. Researcher, I just want to check one thing with all the things that you've spoken about. You know that in health, everywhere these days, there's this thing of preventative rather than curative. Don't wait until people are ill. You spend a lot of money curing, buying, giving medicines rather. Prevent the illness to take place. Advise people how to avoid AIDS, how to avoid, don't wait until the bird will take. So, just here, what approach are we using with all these things? I'm just worried that in justice, for example, women get abused by men and curative methods are taken, but when they are released from shelters and men are released from jail, these women go back to this man, because if you ask them, they'll say, I depend on him, I'm not working, I've got children. Are we having other bills, for example, that allow women to have their own houses, to have jobs, so that, you know, you cure, you're really preventing abuse that way. And this applies to preventative method to youth disability. And what approach are we generally using? Is it, I mean, the issue of cause and effect, are we dealing with the effect or are we dealing really with the cause in the general approach?
Thanks, Danny. I think I'm
going to
Thank you, Chair. I want to concur with what our colleague Danny has just said. This is something that's vexed my mind for a long time about the lack of safety for people who have mentioned or reported abuse. So I think it's an excellent idea. I want to bring up the fact that we need to push for safe houses, but we know that safe houses can't be in existence forever. So what he has suggested is very good. And I just want to commend our researchers for what they brought forward today. I have felt for a long time that we're not as involved with things like legislation and so on in the past. So it looks as though we're going into a new step. And I would request that we are informed a lot more about what is happening in the background. I think we hear now that a letter was written, this was done and that was done, but as members of the committee, or as a member of the committee, I'm not aware of this, and I think it would help us to be more informed, more proactive and more useful as a committee if we can be involved with what is being done in the background. So thank you for what you're doing now. I think we're going forward and that is great. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, I just want to maybe say that out of what was discussed now and brought to us, I feel that when it comes to our program, the operational program out of the strategic plan, I would suggest that we prioritize the areas. And because we have had the and I'll just make one example, the Domestic Violence Act we took for public hearing. There is a report, it still has to be tabled, and I think that should be one of our main or first attempts to get that out of the way, because it is in process. And it now has to be tabled, and we can also look at the the act to be amended and to really find out what does imminent harm mean, because we continue to say it, but we have to find out what and how it needs to be amended. So what I'm saying in essence is that maybe we can prioritize out of our strategic plan. Are we going to do to be amended first and then go over to, for instance, to what needs to be initiated? Deliberated, and then to be discussed, I'm just giving an idea to our researchers when it comes to our operational plan. So I suggest that we prioritize in order to give us where we're going to start for the year in operational plan. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Member. I think you are already speaking to the operational plan, which I think will also assist you when it gets compiled. But just to also echo what members have said, to say that these bills are there, and this committee, which if I understood you well, is that it does not have, you know, that opportunity to speak to close by close, because that is handled by, you know, justice. But I think because this committee actually focuses on some of the sectors, you know, that spoken to by the bill, I think it is on us really to push justice, to write those letters, or whether we want to invite the presenters to come and make a presentation to this committee, so that then we can be able to move with the bill. Because if we are going to be waiting for justice, I'm telling you, we can 2 years by can pass without having done anything with regards to them. So I think it's upon us, you know, to decide as to whether we want to invite these people to come and give a presentation, so that we can be able to pressurize justice, you know, as this fall within, you know, the committee on justice. And I think it goes to most of the bills that have been highlighted here, and also the gender equality bill. I think that bill is very important. And if you can remember, in the structure of the department, they had put it to be finalized sometime, I think, in December. And I think we should really pressurize, or maybe speak to their structure, to say they must bring it forward, because it will enable us to deal with other issues, you know, immediately as we pass it.
Thank you, members. On the issue of prevention, we concur with you, Mr. Kekana. I think the challenge is structurally, again, I looked at the committee. For example, the issue of housing. Any act and bill related to housing will go to the PC of Housing. So far, most of the bills that have implications for our sectors goes to justice. So I think at a higher level within Parliament, whether it's Whippity, Chair of Chairs, with Speaker, there needs to be engagement with the committee and that level to say, actually, why can't the bill be referred to two committees? And that can happen. But I think there needs to be push from our committee for those joint initiatives. Because at the moment, we are being reactive and requesting after the fact, once a bill has already been sent. That means we don't have voting powers. On the issue of housing, again, issues of housing and shelter, one of the issues that came out of the Domestic Violence Act is there is currently no provisioning. And so one of the recommendations was the Act needs to be amended to look at secondary housing needs. So if we look at priorities in terms of what we need to do for legislation, we do need to have the debate in the House. The report has already been tabled, but there has to be an opportunity in which the House sits and we engage on what the issues are in relation to our report. Because there you can raise the concerns about secondary abuse and prevention in relation to what is the role of the Department of Housing and PC and Housing looking at the needs of children and women in relation to shelter. Because then you can direct that recommendation directly to where it needs to go. So in terms of issues of prevention, I would say there's two things. Firstly, at a high level, from the committee, there needs to be engagement. I don't know where precisely Speaker's Office the whippery of chair chairs to say where there are bills that have direct implications for our sectors, that they request for joint, the bill be sent to two committees, that there has to be a joint session. Because then from the onset, we have a better footing in. And then the second thing is definitely I would agree with Honourable Duncan, we can't do everything, we need to prioritise. So let's have a debate in the House around the Domestic Violence Act. That's when Eliswa can look at perhaps post-budget, because there won't be time between plenaries now, to request for time. And then members can look at what are the issues you want to take on and address it there and then. In terms of other priorities, I would agree with Chairperson that yes, we don't need to wait for justice to engage with issues. But there again, we need to get guidance from the committee. So amidst this list, we've prioritized one, that the debate on the DVA will happen. Yes, we want input around particular legislation. So for example, if it's the Muslim Marriages Bill, and the request is that we actually want to give an understanding of what that is, and the committee needs to indicate and we can prioritize that maybe it won't happen in the second, the third, perhaps will be in the third term. We'll put it down so that's already on the program, not to be dealt with now, but it's something that's on the tick list. Other issues of prevention, again, I'm thinking back to one of Honourable Duncan's suggestions about marketing the committee. What is the role of our committee? We would assume that we should have better conferral with social development and social services and education, but that doesn't really happen. We've had one conferral meeting with basic education with Honourable Chohan when she was still around teenage pregnancy. That was one. And then we always have joint meeting with our select counterpart. But there again, there needs to be a request as to, well, how do we confer better with other committees on issues, and where is that discussion happening? Either at the chair of chair or whoopery has to say, well, for the committee's program, what are the issues that committees are dealing with? We know what we are dealing with for this year. Our theme is around education and skills development. But how do we begin to say, how do we work more collaboratively together? And maybe part of that is to market the committee, and maybe we have a pamphlet that indicates this is the role of the committees, these are our sectors, and perhaps give some indication as to the sorts of activities the committee's done, so that other members have an understanding as to what it is that we do. So maybe the request now is from hearing from members in terms of other goals that you want to prioritize, which is that? And then we can put that on the list in terms of the program to invite whether it's the Justice Department or experts from outside to brief the committee on a particular bill. So just an indication as to which bill, besides DVA, would you like to focus on to get more input.
Can I make a suggestion? Maybe we can put something together, just an overview, even if it's a couple of lines on what each of these bills are about, so that members have an idea of what they are, and maybe from there we can decide, because I think just to, maybe it's a bit difficult just to pick one of the lists if you're not sure exactly what it's about. So maybe we can put that together and then prioritize from there.
So then just on page two, so two of the things which have come out is the letter to justice that will be written to ask in terms of the status of bills, where are they at, and when they would prioritize it. And then the second thing is we will provide an overview of each of the bills, and then we will look at the LISWA securing a time for a debate on the DVA report. We move on now to page three, looking at oversight. Bearing in mind that the theme for this year is around education and skills development in relation to each of the target groups. In the first column, we have noted possible areas for engagement? What are the issues that the committee could be engaging with the department, civil society, experts on the field, and tech oversight? Generally, it's around gender parity, whether it's in schools, high schools, FET, colleges, and the likes. The impact of gender-based violence in relation to education, high schools, secondary schools, and tertiary education, impact of HIV, teenage pregnancy, there's the girls' education movement, attrition rates, why are there high dropout rates at high schools and tertiary education, not just looking at numbers, but also access to quality education. In terms of children with disability, the concern around inclusive education and special needs, the infrastructure and access, ECD is as important. The basic education has come and developed guidelines on sexual harassment and violence in public schools, the impact of poverty and no-fee schools, school nutrition program, the child support grant, all of these impact on children within the schooling system. What about children in especially difficult circumstances, living on the street, refugee children, children living in rural areas? Overleaf on page 4, motor vehicle accidents, particularly on children commuting to school. The concern of out-of-school youth is a current initiative, Bridges the Future, a youth initiative. The impact of drug abuse on youth and within high schools and tertiary education. There's the literacy campaign. The president has prioritized encouragement of learners around science, engineering, and teaching. FET colleges, looking at issues around seekers, access to funding and bursaries, internships and artisanships. So now if we look at the activities, besides engaging around our mandate around our own department, around the strategic plan, annual report budgets, we are also able to look at conducting site visits. But more importantly, in relation to each of these areas for engagement, there are particular acts that relate to the legal framework for which the service delivery would happen and the right to be fulfilled. So that these acts is Social Assistance Act, Children's Act, Sexual Offences, National Youth Development Agency, Basic Conditions of Employment, SA Schools, Education Laws, Further Education and Training Colleges, and the CGE Act. So in terms of the next column, it looks at targets and outputs. So given all the areas of engagement and the acts which we need to conduct oversight on, who could we possibly call? The obvious would be the Department of Women, Children, Persons with Disabilities and the NYDA. They would come to us every term around reporting around their programs and budgeting. Department of Basic Education, Higher Education, Sector Education and Training Authority, Labour, Economic Development, Trade and Industry. And the reason, looking at those three, I think they all have implications for skills development in terms of having particular programs or funds allocated around enhancing skills development. Department of Transport, particularly in relation to issues of the motor vehicle accidents and children commuting to school. In terms of Department of International Relations and Cooperation, that would relate to some of the getting Durko to come and talk to us about treaty compliance. And then we have the Central Drug Authority, which is linked to the issues of drug abuse and the impact of children and youth in schools and tertiary education. Then, what I've also done on page 4 is to look at, given those are the committee's oversight areas for engagement for the year, where could we possibly be going in terms of undertaking study tours locally? What we've done is we've collated and pulled out based on our engagements for the past few months. In terms of Group A, looking at if we were to go to a particular province or particular municipality, looking at, for example, the NYDA always talks to, they've got a program around matric rewrite. So why not go and visit that particular municipality where that program is run. But while we are there, look at, some people would go to the NYDOA program in terms of members, but we utilize our time effectively. We also look within that municipality, city or province, where are the special schools, or where are the other schools where the sanitary dignity campaign is being implemented. So that within one province, we take guidance as to, based on what the department is telling us, this is where they implement this program, as well as the NYDA, so that we maximize our time. And that the consideration is that for the next terms, we have oversight, one oversight visit around a grouped issues. Group B would then be looking at FET colleges, CETAs, university or technicon, and they again would be having an understanding as to, in terms of, are youth able to access FET colleges, are CETAs working, which areas are they working in, are youth with disabilities able to enter those FET colleges. If you're going to a university, does that university have a disability unit? Do they even have youth with disability at the university? It would be an opportunity to engage with students there and find out from the experiences what's difficult for them, because that would make our role different to the PC in higher education and basic education. But we can also confer. For example, I've checked with the researcher for the PC in basic education. A couple of months ago, there was an article about the 57 learners at a school in Limpopo who were pregnant. They haven't done an oversight visit there. There would be an opportunity to confer with Honourable Malchus jointly and say, let's have an understanding, go to the school and see what are the concerns at that school. But besides that school, we could also say, well, where's the NYDA projects around? Where's the Sanitary Dignity Campaign projects around? So we confirm one thing, but we can also do other issues. And then there was also a suggestion by Honourable Clarke around concerning with the Multi-Party Women's Caucus around the MDGs oversight that they intend doing, but we haven't had any clarification as to how and when that's happening. Over and above all these groupings, we also thought it would be important that when we do a site visit to a particular province or municipality, we link up, now that we've met the Premier's offices in terms of legislatures, let the Premier's office personnel say, well, we're going to visit this particular school, but based on our last engagement with you, you indicated that these are your programs. Take us, show us how you implement your programs so that we begin to see what our oversight visit in terms of our specific mandate links to what the Premier's office is actually doing. And there will be also an opportunity to engage with the legislature. So I think we can combine issues and these can be grouped. So in a nutshell, that covers issues around oversight in terms of briefings as well as study tours. Perhaps you would need guidance from the committee as to, in terms of who you want briefed within committee meetings. We've given a list of these are the possible departments we can request. Would you want prioritized? And over and above these departments, is there anyone else that we've not included on the list that you want on the list? And in terms of study tours, perhaps to give some input around how we've grouped the sectors and grouped the issues, and in terms of provinces, whether there are any recommendations. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Kasifa, do you want to do you have anything to add? Honourable members, over to you. Honourable Petty and Honourable Kekana, those two.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to ask the researchers, we do not have under legislation. I just want to, for 1 second, just go back to the prevention and treatment of substance abuse. Is it a bill? It's an act. It's a bill. Is it an act? I just thought of, because we talk about substance abuse chairperson, that they also make that part of legislation. And then with regard to our main task, I'm glad to see that we do have trade and industry and Department of Economic Development and even Department of Labor. I'm very concerned about the disability sector in the sense of economic empowerment. I think this is something that we really have to push, because we all talk about just the 2% target that needs to be reached for positions that need to be filled by persons with disability. However, for our disabled sector to not only be involved in protected workshops, you know, but rather to enter the market as such. And even when we later maybe talk about tours to maybe other countries, like for instance Australia, who would be a good example for maybe looking at the protected workshops and also the proper economic empowerment of disabled, you know, entrepreneurs and all of that. So maybe that is what I want to just highlight. What was the other thing? And then also youth. I've just heard over the radio this morning that 70% of prisoners are youth. It is shocking. And it brings me back to substance abuse. I think that our country needs to take a direction, and maybe we can start to initiate and address it, that our young children that are involved in drug abuse, you know, and even the ordinary crimes like children who steal, they go to prison, that we start looking at rehabilitation. And like, for instance, it's quite in line with what Mr. Fikani, when he talks about prevention, you know, in a way. But I think that we need to take that up, that 70% of youth that is in prison. Are we still going to put our children in prison, or are we going to look at rehabilitation centers rather than sending them there? My own personal feeling is that only murderers and rapists belong in prisons, nobody else. Not even if you steal money, it all has to do with rehabilitation, because something has gone wrong, but it can be set right. I will come in again. Thank you.
Chair, on the empowerment skills thing, I heard you say when you do oversight, you'll have to go and check the FET colleges, CTAR, which is very good. I just want to actually pin it down, because if we say we want disabled people, for example, to be attended to, life is not a big challenge. Unless they are productive, unless they've got skills, I mean, that also applies to women. If you say we want women's empowerment, ultimately the first thing is that women and disabled people and youth must be skilled. Because employers are not, for example, going to employ disabled people just because policy says so. Mm-hmm. I mean, life is not a charity. They don't care whether you are a cripple or not, unless you've got something to offer, mm-hmm. unless you can be productive. Even for women, they won't employ you because you're wearing a nice mini skirt. You must be productive. You've got to say, these are the skills that I have, and as a result, I've got something to offer the company. So this thing of skills, for me, is very fundamental. It could help us a lot. And the fact I've just spoken about jails, this is a society. The way you engineer your society is what the results are going to be. Some doctor was telling me in Russia, if you've got flu, you don't go to work. because the government is saying we'd rather prevent it. If you go to work, freeze infectious, 10 people at work might end up being sick, and as a result, the government will have to treat 10 people instead of one people. So they'd rather save money at hospital by keeping you at home until you're cured. So I'm saying just those simple operational things are very important in life. We can sit here and do policies, big policies, but if in real life they don't change people's lives, we know where as a country. I was just saying, really, I would like you to emphasize the issue of ECT colleges, CETAs, in the mainstream of our empowering of, because as long as this, you know, we went to Natal in communication, we're told 6% of the people who start primary education are finishing tertiary education. So if you see 6%, in developed countries, it is 80% to start primary. Then you know there'll be poverty. So I'm just saying human resource development is very important, and I'd like to support you that we prioritize.
Thank you, honourable members. Before it gets out of my head, I just wanted to echo what the members say about, you know, people with disability. Because I think even at the workshop it was emphasized that, you know, we should not see them as only social development, but also as economic development. And then with substance abuse and drug abuse, I'm really like talking about rehabilitation. I want us members to, even if it's not, you know, it won't be one of the priorities. But I think the model that we saw when we went to New York, whereby the judge presides, you know, overuse drug abuse problems, and instead of them being sent to jail, they are then being sent, you know, for rehab. And how they do them, I think those who were there will remember. It was very interesting because they sent this youth. The judge presides, and then he sends this youth for rehab. But then says to them, after so many months, he must come back to court. And there is a mentor, there are social workers, there are lawyers, and some of the youth, in turn, they are being used in the same court after the rehabilitation. And I think it's a good system, it's a good model. Mm-hmm. And I think we should really encourage, you know, yeah. It to be, you know, to be followed. And also let us not forget the model that also the model from Limpopo on the persons with disability. Limpopo, you know, their presentation was very much impressive in the sense that they have even exceeded the target in terms, you know, in terms of development of persons with disability. Honorable Robinson.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, I think you're so right. The New York model was a wonderful one. And I do believe they've got something similar in Delft. It was certainly started with a great deal of fanfare and excitement. How successful it's been, I'm not sure. Delft, which is not too far away in Cape Town. So I think, you know, we should really go and see some of our own success stories or see whether they are succeeding. If the model was similar, when I came back from New York, I spoke to people about it, and they said, yes, yes, we're doing that already. But let's follow on and see if it is that successful, how we can multiply that example. And I really just want to follow on also about the fact that we need more rehab and not just prisons. We need, as a committee or as a grouping, to see that government is actually supporting so many, you know, try to encourage the fact that government must support initiatives. There are many workshops that I've seen where people who are disabled are being trained, but most of them are struggling for survival. Honourable Duncan and I were both working on a project for young people who dropped out of society and then they were relocated to an area like a farm where they were going to be given a better, you know, another opportunity away from all the problems of a society. But these places all struggle for funding. So we are relying on the NGOs, we're relying on society to help our people, and I do feel that government needs to do more, including things like transport. You know, the facilities for people with disabilities to get to and from work. In most cases, it's a municipal function. Municipalities all don't have the funding for that. So therefore, we need to lobby at the funding level when it comes to time to look at the budget through into those other departments. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think I've missed so much because I didn't attend your workshop, but I was engaged somewhere at Auditor General. In main task at Bullet 4, Karhute Mass Literacy Campaign, I'm worried about this Karhute Literacy Campaign, because I think there's no monitoring system in this program, because in my area in Soweto, you can hear these people who just getting money from the government that they are teaching literacy in the old people. But because there's no monitoring, those people, they're doing nothing. There's nothing. They are earning this money every month, and there's no, they're teaching nobody, you know, because there is no monitoring. I think we must start monitoring all these initiatives. They are good initiatives, but the government must monitor all these programs. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Member. I think one last thing on this one is, I think under PEGA's output, we shouldn't leave out non-governmental organizations. You know, it was an emphasis even at the time when one went to New York to say, you know, it is very important to involve civil society, because sometimes the report of the country, we have a report that goes there and says, you know, it works with civil society, when it, yes, in reality it doesn't. So I think we should try as this committee to involve NGOs as much as we can.
Thank you. I just feel that maybe we need to put treasury there as well, because that speaks directly to money, and I don't think that we must avoid seeing treasury. It's a whole lot of questions that we can ask in general, especially with regard to that department themselves, but also other departments that may be underspending, whether they check those things and all of that. And then I do want to thank you for the support, Chairperson, on the substance abuse and the rehab. I really think that we must go into that. I just want to make a point. If we look at prostitution and drug abuse, they have one thing in common. They're both illegal in this country. So, which means that if something is illegal, it is difficult to regulate it, because against what do you regulate? You only regulate against the fact that it is not allowed. So we have to, and I hope that somewhere in the rest of the 3 years, at least, Chairperson, that we will make a contribution to prostitution and drug abuse, either legalizing or criminalize, things like that, that we actually go into a debate so that we can begin to understand where we're going with these two very, very important that have a big negative impact on women, and also then on especially young people, although from all ages are involved in drug abuse. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Jay. I just want to follow up on something that you mentioned. The civil society report that was tabled in New York, and the credibility of that report. I really think that we need to look at who goes, who compiles the report, who civil society is. I think there may be instances, institutions that have been around a long time, and they are automatically the ones that one goes to and says, give us your report. But it might be an idea for us to interview these civil society organizations. Let's get them in here. Let us go and visit. Because I think many cases, these are just a charade. It's up on the surface, it's not down below. And perhaps when we have the next civil society report, after we have investigated and checked out the credibility, we can have new groups of people going, or at least a new representative group that will be truly working and not just talking and going for a joyride. Thank you.
Thanks, Honourable Member Robinson. Honourable Member Duncan raised the question of prostitution. And I hope that you have noted it in stroke sex workers, because I don't think we can talk about prostitutes without also talking about sex workers. And it's always a worrying factor, because we don't have a position in this country on those factors. And every time when they are being discussed, we don't know what to say. You know, you speak from your own mind, because as South Africa, we don't have a position on that yet. But if this portfolio committee can start discussing that, you know, perhaps we will get somewhere.
Thank you, Chairperson. What we'll note, the issue of prostitution and sex workers is an area to be discussed under legislation. I know that the state law advisors were doing a discussion paper, and they were supposed to come up, because that was supposed to dovetail around the trafficking. But that hasn't come. But that could be an issue in terms of a briefing to the committee. We could ask the state law advisor, what's the status around this issue and what have they come up with, and get someone from civil society also to talk as to the implications. So that was the one that I noted. We will note the issue of National Treasury and add that to the list, as well as in terms of compliance around prevention of substance abuse. My suggestion around issues of drug abuse is that when we do a local oversight, that whether it's to an FET college, a municipality, or province, we should be asking prior to us going for the official program to say, what is the issue of drug abuse in this province? How many drug rehab centers do you have? Where are they located? How many youth go in and out? And the Central Drug Authority can give us the breakdown. And then we can have social development tell us is it being funded, to what extent. But also I think it's important in relation to FETs, universities and schools to be engaging with the educators. To what extent are you challenged by drug abuse in relation to your learners within the school environment or violence? So perhaps that's the way we actively engage around the issue of drug abuse. In terms of crime and the link to education and rehab, just based on my experience as an occupational therapist around rehabilitation, is that's the first thing that goes on the budget. What government loves spending on is structural stuff. So they will give money for putting in a building, but they forget that we actually need a social worker, a psychologist, and OT. And that to do a program like reintegration of the community, you need money and resources. And engagement with many of professionals who do rehab out in the communities, they cash that. They get money from outside of South Africa. Because the challenge with wanting to do rehab at the community level is that you've got to show where you do it. So government likes to show that you're an NGO, you're in a building, and they won't necessarily fund personnel, but they'll fund something else. So I think when we go out in terms of oversight is to ask from people on the ground what are the challenges, so that we can, because different provinces will tell you rehab in every area would mean different things. Like in New York, rehab in the community worked very well because there's a commitment from the magistrate, the judge and the social worker that they will do things around sport. There's a commitment to do that. But we can't, in South Africa, given the diversity, there can be some genetic things, but within a particular province, we've got to hear from the people what their suggestions are. I will include the issue of the mass literacy campaigns, perhaps around the FET colleges and CETAs around Group B. So when we go out to a municipality or province, is to find out where is this happening, and who's in terms of the monitoring, who's overseeing them, who's providing the mentorship. Okay, I think that's it. Maybe around the study tours around provinces, again, to hear from members, would you be fine with if we look at Group A? So Group A would focus around children in particular and in the NYDA, and maybe consider going to a school where there were many learners who were pregnant. Yesterday on the radio, there was in Delft, the primary school, also with 30 months, there were already 11 learners, and the youngest of which is 13. And maybe then, so as it turns out, priority for our oversight, do that and perhaps confer with Honourable Malhat around basic education when we go to the school. So maybe just input around the study to her whether you think that's a good idea and we can follow through in terms of the Liswa and logistics around that.
Yeah, thank you, Kashifa. You know, I have spoken to Malhat, but I think the committee secretary can still do that, you know, in a form of formality, because I spoke to her and she said that, you know, she was also thinking that, you know, there's a need for the two committees, the portfolio committees, to look into that and see how, whether we take it, we do it jointly, or whether, you know, they do it as a portfolio committee. But then you also, I think we should follow up on the suggestion that you raised in terms of, you know, joint meetings. Because if you look at this portfolio committee, I'm not sure as to whether, when it comes to oversight, which one do we start with? Whether we start by meeting with the relevant department, or whether we first go on oversight, perhaps we should also speak to that and see how do, or it doesn't matter whether we do it the other way.
I think there's value in both. I'm just thinking recently there was an unannounced oversight visit to a prison. The PC for Correctional Services went to the prison, and people were taken aback because the committee is entitled to walk into any public institution and to ask, let me see, help me understand. I think there's value in that because you also hear from that person as a service provider what their challenge is. So when you have your briefing with your department, you actually step up, because then you can engage with your department. So based on our oversight, the experiences have shown that this special school, there are no toilets to accommodate children in wheelchairs. And that in terms of the mass literacy campaign, we know for a fact that they're getting a salary, but they're not delivering anything. So, Chairperson, I think there's value in both, that if your department comes, they can tell you, this is what our budget is, and this is what our program is. So when you do your oversight, you can compare to what they're saying. The reverse is, if you do an oversight visit, you gather your information, and then you call the department to brief you, but at that stage you're really armed with having the experience on the ground. So these opportunities either way, so maybe we can take guidance from the committee.
Yeah, Chair, I wanted to follow up on the issue again that was raised by Pat on prostitution and drug abuse. What I want to ask our researcher, you see with prostitution, we able to say this is world experience. That is why when we go overseas, we want to learn and see how, especially people who are doing what you are doing, but they've done it before as advanced countries, and see what are failures there, what are successes, so that you don't repeat failures. Now, with prostitution, it's easy to copy examples because it is industrialized, it is an industry in its own right. And it is happening in developed countries, in Rome, where head office of Rome is, in England, where head office of Anglican Church is, and
Amsterdam.
Pat is experienced in this area, as you can see for yourself. So you can see also about their moral fiber in the society, whether it has deteriorated because of that as well. Something with prostitution, because we can learn and see from samples all over the world, yes, there we know what to do. But this drug abuse, when Pat raised, I was just asking myself, how do we decriminalize it? Imagine our chairman, if it is decriminalized, is taking dark and chairing this meeting, what chaos it might end up in. So, especially the green stuff, which is not highly pharmaceutical. In the rural areas, I mean, all people do smoke it as a natural thing. And in some cultures, the even students, some students in universities will tell you, I get more stimulated, I can read better after taking the stuff, I have more. So, what I'm asking is do we have examples all over the world where it is some drugs, not all of them, some of them are decriminalized, and they are put to better use? Because without those examples, I'm going to be very hesitant to make South Africa a testing ground. Like I've said, if the chair is discriminates and she always takes puffs of green stuff and come and chair here, we might be in big trouble because she smoked dacha.
Is this committee closed?
I think Dennis, you know, he wants to put this committee into disarray. Disorganize this committee. But on a serious note, Member Robinson, was your hand up?
No, not this time. I think it's still.
Oh, Member Pen?
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I just want to know, I think I'm curious. There are homosexuals and lesbians. Where do they fit in? Chairperson, whether we like it or not, these people are many and they are becoming many daily. Mm-hmm. My constituency there, they always come to my office asking for advice. I really don't know what to do. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Member. I see here we don't have health and social services. Is there a reason why we don't have them under target outcome? Social Development and Health Department. Are they not applicable here? Because I think we're talking about drug abuse, talking social development, and you remember also when the Department of Health came to make a presentation, they were actually asking us to give them a support in terms of campaign on the test on HIV/AIDS.
We'll definitely include social development and health. particularly around the access to contraception and HIV testing, and then social development in relation to social security and the rehab as well. And police.
Yeah.
And correction services.
Member Robinson?
Yes, Chair. Just to follow on what my colleague said about gays and lesbians, I think you've heard me speaking about corrective rape and all these other abuses, which are human rights abuses, of people who have their own leanings. Whether we like it or not, we must accept that. And as has been mentioned, it is growing. And you've got transgender people. They are intergender issues, which have never really been discussed, I think, and one tends to push them aside. And if one thinks about athletes, Caster Semenya, you know, it was a whole hoo-ha, a political issue, whereas this is actually a human rights issue. So I think we do need to investigate and see what we can do to bring those rights for equality to people who may be different, but are still human beings who need every single right as we have. Talking about disability, it was mentioned, we already put so much money and funding and everything else into HIV, and very necessarily so. But do you know that there are more people, more children who are now getting, children who are living with autism or who are on the autism spectrum? Their numbers are increasing so. I don't have the stats with me now, but I attended a function on Saturday evening where it was quite frightening to hear what is happening to children because of the susceptibility of the brain to various things like pollution or whatever, where more and more people are becoming autistic. And this is a tremendous burden, again, for the public, because government doesn't recognize that there is no funding for that. That this ties up with what Danny said previously, prevention is far better than cure. So too with HIV. This is where you come in with your birth control and your condoms and whatever else. But if we can try and make sure that there is more remedial help, if an autistic child is recognized and treated within the first 18 months, that child can usually end up in an ordinary school. And there are children who were at one stage just lying on a carpet like little blobs of flesh, who couldn't communicate, who couldn't speak. But through this intensive training, one-on-one, which is very expensive, some of those are now at university and they are fully mainstreamed. So we have enormous challenges. But let's not always just think of the obvious ones. There are others that we need to think about too.
Just before we move on to page 5, looking at public participation, I think we always look at the ATC and the order papers and the minutes from the NA. One thing which we think is quite important is raising motions in the House. So over and above formal debates is for members, many of these things we'll be able to engage with in our briefing meetings, but I think there's also an opportunity to issue statements and raise motions in the House, and that is fixed within the individual members of the committee. I think that's also something which can be utilised more effectively. Moving now on to page 5, in terms of the task, that's facilitating public participation and involvement. So far, we've had the public hearings, we've had the summit, and in terms of suggestions for 2011, we thought that perhaps we could be looking at country reports. As an opportunity to hear from civil, because there are two country reports that's outstanding. The children's country report, that's 13 years late, and the disability report are now a year late. But there's an opportunity for the committee to engage with civil society. Even though we've requested from the department, please send us your draft report, and it was restated again to us that the formal procedure in terms of country reports, it is that once the department has done it, it comes to the committee for engagement. The moment it goes to cabinet for endorsement, it is signed off. There's nothing that can be done to change that report. That is why it's so important that before it goes to cabinet for cabinet endorsement, that country report comes to this committee, so that you, the committee, can engage on what is the department saying, what are we doing for children or persons with disabilities. And if there are things that are absent, wrong, or incorrect, the committee has the full authority to say, this doesn't make sense. Based on our experience, X, Y, and Z should be done. So perhaps the suggestion around public involvement and participation is that perhaps in 2011, we have a two-day opportunity to engage with civil society across the border to, we're looking at the country report, how is South Africa complying in terms of its obligations? And then maybe in 2012, we look at, in terms of disability, how is the country complying? Just in terms of, given the fact that we've got local government elections in May, and the year is short, and the other things we have to do between now and November, and we still want to do oversight, maybe we focus on one, and that's around country reports. But if there are any other suggestions in terms of facilitating public involvement and participation, to date, in terms of how we manage our committee meetings, we usually dovetail it. Before the executive comes to present, we usually look within civil society and request the committee to be briefed by experts in the field, or an NGO on the alternative perspective. So within committee meetings, we're doing that already. And when we do oversight visits, we usually link up with an NGO to help show us around to a particular area. So the study tours already include civil society, as well as our briefings in terms of meetings. But in terms of a particular activity dedicated to civil society around public involvement, that the committee would consider us doing something around the Children's Country Report.
Thank you, Kashifa. I think it will also be helpful to the committee if we know well in advance when is the report going to be presented, abroad, so that, like you say, we become, proactive. We then invite the civil society, everything. And then, because we know that, our country reports are always late, it might also not be ready at that time. But now, since we've got this information from the civil society, then we will have, the means to pressurize the cabinet, to sit on their shoulder, to say, but we have to be giving a report, a country report. And this time around, we would like to input in that report, so that by the time it's finalized by cabinet, we had the opportunity as a committee to have had, input into that report before being signed. Honorable Petty.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think our researchers have